Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
What are the two dimensions to being a truly kick-ass boss? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here, helping you to achieve your full potential 5 days a week. And in just a minute, we're going to talk about how to be a kick-ass boss without losing your humanity. But first, visit leadx.org, where you'll find hundreds of articles from dozens of the best business writers out there. And sign up for our quick read newsletter, which is packed with actionable tips you can try out right away. That's leadx.org. Our guest today was a highly successful leader at Google. She later joined Apple and designed and taught a course for first-time managers called Managing at Apple. She's gone on to coach the CEOs of Dropbox, Qualtrics, Twitter, and several other tech companies. She's the co-founder and CEO of Candor, Inc. Her new book is Radical Candor, Be a Kick-Ass Boss Without Losing Your Humanity. Our guest is Kim Scott. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
I'm excited to talk about radical candor, but first, will you share with us a time, maybe early in your career, when you actually failed, and what was a lesson you learned from it?
Yes, I will. In fact, a big part of what prompted me to write this book and to start this company was probably the worst moment in my career. I had hired this guy, we'll call him Bob, and I really liked Bob. Bob was funny. He was charming. He would do stuff like we were once at a management offsite playing one of those ridiculous time-wasting games that nobody dares to say, let's cut this out. And Bob said, why don't we do something really fast? Let's just go around the table and everybody can confess what candy their parents used when potty training. Weird,
oh boy.
But fast. We all did it. And for the next 10 months, every time there was a tense moment in a meeting, Bob would whip out just the right piece of candy for the right person at the right moment. So that gives you a flavor of what it was like to work with Bob. He was funny. I liked him. There was just one problem with Bob. He was doing terrible work, absolutely terrible work. And because I liked him so much, because I wanted to be quote unquote nice to Bob,
right,
I didn't tell him that his work was nowhere near good enough. And I would give him sort of praise that was like a head fake, like, oh, Bob, you're so awesome. This is a great start, but I think you can make it a little better. And after 10 months of this, the inevitable happened, and I realized that if I didn't fire Bob, we were going to fail. And when I told Bob where things stood, he pushed his chair back from the table. He looked me right in the eye, and he said, why didn't you tell me? And as that question is going around in my head with no very good answer, he says to me, why didn't anyone tell me? I thought you all cared about me. And now I realize that I have failed Bob in 6 really important ways. I have failed to solicit feedback from him. Maybe I was doing something that was driving him to toke up in the bathroom, but I never asked him, right? I failed to, and by feedback, I mean both praise and criticism.
Right.
Maybe there was some stuff I was doing well, but more likely there was some stuff I was doing that was driving him crazy. I failed to give him praise that was really meaningful. The praise I gave him was really just a lie, or at best a head fake. And I didn't tell him when his work wasn't nearly good enough. And probably worst of all, I had failed to create an environment in which everyone would tell Bob what was really genuinely good and would tell him when he was going off the rails. And because I had failed in these 6 very important ways, I'm firing Bob because of it. Like, that's the worst thing about being a manager, is that you learn your mistakes on the backs of other people. And that feels really awful. And all I could do in that moment, because it was too late to save Bob, all I could do in that moment was to promise myself that I would never make that mistake again, ever. And that I would do everything I could to help the people who I worked with avoid making that mistake. And it was probably in that moment, in that promise to myself, that this book was born.
Wow, such an honest and raw story, and one that resonates with me, Kim, because, you know, giving feedback, I still don't think I'm great at it, but it was really my kryptonite. And when I was young and dumb in my 20s, you know, I was raised in a very non-confrontational household. I wanted everybody to like me. So I would just withhold all the feedback. And to this day, it's sort of why I don't like those annual performance reviews, because bad managers like me would withhold feedback. It's like, well, hey, I'm not going to talk to Kim about this now. I'll just tell her about it in 9 months when her annual review comes up, right?
Yeah. So, and that makes that review time terrible.
Yes, it sure does, because it all comes flying out at once. So this is very interesting. I mean, it really has led many years later to your new book, Radical Candor. So what is radical candor?
Radical candor is very simple on the surface of it. Radical candor is the ability to challenge people directly at the same time that you show them that you care personally. And it's something that you can do when you're giving feedback, both praise and criticism. It's something you can do when you're building a team, even more important when you're building a team, because now you're not just impacting people's feelings, you're impacting their wallets and whether they get promoted and so on and so forth. And you can put this into practice in the way that you achieve results as a leader. So radical candor is, again, on the surface of it, very simple. Show you care personally at the same time that you're willing to challenge people directly.
So, okay, let's talk about the caring personally part. And I feel like it's gotten a bit complicated because, you know, I used to be the guy that would want the team to go out for drinks after work or even do these mini retreats on the weekend or these summer picnics. But now it feels like that's not so cool, because in a way it's almost a punishment. Like, hey, not only are you going to give me all your hours during the week, I'm going to make you give me the hours at night and the weekend. And, you know, sometimes I want to talk to, or just trying to connect, I'll ask people kind of personal questions. And then I catch myself and it's like, oh, wait a minute, am I invading their privacy? And is it creepy that the boss is asking about these things? So what's your advice? What's the right way to care personally these days?
Such an important question. And the wrong way to do it is to schmooze all the time, right? You don't show that you care personally by taking up extra time from people, by having work dinners that eat into family time or into time with friends or just whatever. But I love to write novels after work, so into novel writing time. What the way that you show that you care personally is actually in the way that you give feedback. It's in the way that you build the team. It's in the way that you achieve results. I once had a boss who walked into my office and he said, you know, you seem to have all these great relationships in the industry, but you have lunch all by yourself every day working. How does this work? And I said that the relationships are formed in the way that I work with people, not by taking up extra time. So I think that often the way that you give feedback, when you give somebody praise, you're showing them that you care. But when you give them criticism, you're also showing them that you care. If I had given Bob real criticism, I could have done it in a way that showed him that I cared about him as a person, because I wanted him to do one of two things. Either to fix the work that I thought was bad, or to explain to me that I was wrong and that actually the work was better than I thought, right? So both praise and criticism are gifts that you offer people. Another great way to show that you care in the workplace, especially as a manager, is to have career conversations with people. This is something that my co-founder, Russ Laraway, developed. And these career conversations move beyond the terrible conversations that everybody hates to have about why am I not getting promoted faster, right?
Right.
Have career conversations in which you ask somebody about their life, starting with kindergarten. Tell me about your life. Now, you need to be sensitive, as you point out. Sometimes people would rather die than talk about their childhood with their boss. And so if a person is uncomfortable, by all means, back off. But most people like talking about their life story, right? Most people enjoy that. And when you understand somebody's life story, when you take the time to sort of, and it doesn't have to be huge amounts of time, once a year in a one-on-one, dedicate 45 minutes to talking about the person's life. And when you take the time to really understand what are the pivots they've made in the course of their life, and what can you learn from those pivots about what motivates the person at work, you're going to be able to do a much better job putting them on the right kinds of projects. So I think just having conversations in the ordinary course of events, the way that you conduct your one-on-ones, is a great way to show that you care and that you're listening.
Yeah, and Kim, this is good stuff. And I think, you know, for the listeners out there, I just want to stress again, when I finally became a decent manager in terms of coaching and giving feedback, it was when I understood what Kim just shared, that, you know, giving people feedback, information, it's a gift, whether you're reinforcing some of what they're doing well or pointing out some gaps. And, you know, there's that old phrase that the opposite of love isn't hate, it's indifference. And right. When I was withholding feedback from all those people from all those years, I mean, I cringe now because they're probably like, geez, doesn't Kevin even care about me? He's not talking to me about anything except for that awkward annual performance review.
Yeah.
So when I really realized that the only way you're going to disengage people is by ignoring them, by withholding feedback, they want to hear it all. And that really made a lot of difference for me.
It makes a huge difference. I think you raise a really important point. Like, one of the most common mistakes that new managers make is they know they're not supposed to micromanage people.
Right.
And so instead of doing that, they just ignore them. They become this absentee manager. And they often will say, you know, the way to be a great manager is to hire the right people and get out of their way. It's kind of like saying, the way to have a great marriage is to marry the right person and then never spend another minute with them. It's not going to work.
Yeah. And now, actually, you just cleared it up, because, like, I had a boss who gave me and others almost no time. And he sort of managed through email, even though he sat in an office next to mine.
Yeah.
And sometimes I would doubt myself and say, well, you don't want him to be a micromanager, do you? But, you know, it's not one or the other, you know, so that's not an opposite. That's great.
Exactly. You want a thought partner. You want somebody who's going to help you improve your work and help you see what's good and what's bad.
So we're talking about caring personally, which is caring is the one dimension. The other is challenge directly. So what's your advice for how we challenge directly? And do you have, like, a framework or a model or tips for doing that?
I think one of the most important things to think about when it comes time to challenge directly is this thing that almost all of us have been taught since we learned to speak. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. And now it is your job to say it. And I don't mean to say that lightly. It's hard. It's really hard to undo training that has been beaten into your head since you learned to speak. And one of the things that I've done to make it easier to both show that you care personally, but also to challenge directly, is to name what happens when you fail on one dimension or another pretty dramatically, with some strong language. And so when you show that you care personally, but you fail to challenge directly, I call it ruinous empathy, right? And just sort of as you feel yourself backing off your challenge because somebody is getting upset or getting angry or folding their arms and kind of shutting down on you, it's really important to remember that you don't want to wind up being ruinously empathetic, right?
Right.
That you want to move towards radical candor. And I think sometimes just having a name for what goes wrong can really help you move in the right direction. The name for what goes wrong when you do challenge directly, but you fail to show that you care personally, is obnoxious aggression, right? And you obviously don't want to wind up there. The irony is that bosses, most people when they become managers, tend to fear being called a jerk. And so they retreat to ruinous empathy, or they retreat to the worst place of all, where they neither care nor challenge to manipulative insincerity. And that's kind of like passive aggressive behavior. And so I think sometimes just coming up with a simple framework, you can draw this on a piece of paper, draw a vertical line, that's care personally, draw a horizontal line, that's challenge directly, and then fill in the boxes, radical candor, ruinous empathy, manipulative insincerity, obnoxious aggression. And sometimes just having that kind of simple mental framework can really help push you in the right direction.
No, that's great. I'll make sure we have this matrix up in the show notes as well. And I'm curious, Kim, look, I'm a big believer in the manager one-on-one. So for myself, the once a week, it's always on Mondays, I meet with each direct report one-on-one. It's not, sometimes it's 15 minutes, sometimes it's half an hour. But I'm curious, what do you think about one-on-ones? How often should you have them? Are there certain questions or an agenda you should use?
I have a lot of thoughts about one-on-ones. Yes, you should have them. Most important rule of the one-on-one is, if you're the boss, is to show up for the one-on-one. I also think that your employee needs to own the agenda. You don't own the agenda. Your main purpose in the one-on-one is to listen and to help sort of nurture new ideas from the person. So again, ask your direct report to set the agenda for the one-on-one. And it's really important not to save up feedback for the one-on-one. You don't want to save it up for the performance review for sure, but don't give feedback in the one-on-one. The time and place to give feedback is in 2 to 3 minute conversations, usually just in between meetings, in the moment. The one-on-one, again, is your time to listen. Now, you can, if you want to put one thing on the agenda of the one-on-one, it's to solicit feedback. You can ask, but do that at the end. Do that at the end of the one-on-one. The main purpose of the one-on-one is to listen to your employee. Now, one of the things that I found as a manager is that really listening is hard and draining. And I'm not that good at it. So for me, it worked much better to have a one-on-one every day. Not all my one-on-ones in one day. I'd be too burnt out by the end of the day. So I tried always to have only 5 direct reports. And the reason I wanted 5 direct reports was I like to do the one-on-ones over lunch. I found that one of the most important things about a successful one-on-one was for me to adjust my mindset to the one-on-one, to look forward to it like one of the more fun things I was going to do that day. I was going to have lunch with someone I liked and cared about. And I found if I could, or take a walk, sometimes I like to take a walk with people instead of having lunch now that I'm pushing 50 and fighting the calories, right? But I really find that mindset of the one-on-one is so important.
Wow. Well, that was a gift for me because, you know, I'm a productivity geek. And so the reason why I always stacked mine on Mondays, well, 2 reasons. I think I was thinking about it like, this is the huddle before the game starts, or, you know, we're going to go execute our plays and so let's all get on the same page. But I also, productivity wise, it was just like Monday meetings. You know, I would put as many meetings as possible into my Monday so that I wouldn't have to have as many throughout the week and I could go do other things. But Mondays sucked. I mean, they were horrible, right? They are draining. If you do these meetings right, they are draining. And so I want to rethink that, because with my team now, I'm doing my one-on-ones on Mondays. And as important as they are, I think they know that it's not a great day for me. So maybe spreading it out and doing it over lunch is a better idea. That's awesome.
Yeah, or take a walk. You should enjoy them. Good. Well, I'm glad you're going to try that. Keep me posted how it goes. It worked. It helped me a lot.
That's great. Well, that's going to be my challenge to try. But Kim, I always ask our listeners, hey, become 1% better each and every day, or a little bit better each and every day. What's something else that our listeners can try as, you know, first-time mid-career managers? What do you want them to try with their teams?
I think that one of the most important things you can do as a leader of a team is to solicit feedback. Don't start by dishing it out. Prove you can take it first, right? and exercise some leadership in how much you appreciate the feedback. So I would suggest you do 4 things in soliciting feedback. The first is and you can do this right now as you're listening. Come up with a question that you're going to ask, a question that feels natural for you. I'll share my question with you, but the thing that feels natural for me to ask is probably not the thing that feels natural for you to ask. So you've got to come up with your own question. But the question I always used to like to ask, or and still do ask, is there anything I could do or stop doing that would make it easier to work with me? And I think that's you don't want to ask that question every minute of every day because people will cross their eyes at you. But occasionally, it's a really good question to ask. Once you ask the question, you need to embrace the discomfort. And that's paradoxical because you think that people will tell you the truth when they're comfortable. But if you're the boss and you've asked someone who works for you to give you feedback, you've just put them in a really uncomfortable situation. And it's tempting to let them off the hook. And what they really want to do is tell you nothing. So the most likely response you're going to get is, oh, everything's fine. But it's everything is never fine. There's always something that could be better.
Right.
And so you've got to actually make it more uncomfortable for that person to tell you nothing than to tell you something. And the simplest way to do that is just to stop after you ask your question, shut your mouth, and listen. Count to six in your head if you have to. I just counted to three. That's a long time. Six is a long time. Almost nobody can endure that much silence. They'll tell you something, right? And if they don't, schedule a follow-up meeting. Mm. Now, once you've pulled whatever it is they have to say out of them, you need to make sure you're listening with the intent to understand, not to respond. The tempting thing is to try to fix it or to get defensive. All you want to do at first is to check for understanding. And then the last thing you need to do, it's not enough just to not get defensive. It's not enough to forbear from throwing a chair at somebody who gives you feedback. You've got to actually reward their candor. And you reward it in one of two important ways. The best way, if you agree with what they said, is to fix whatever problem they raised and to fix it visibly, right? If somebody tells you you have bad breath, buy Altoids. Announce the fact that you bought Altoids. Put them on your desk. Ask if they're helping. If you disagree with the feedback, however, this is not a thank you, sir, may I have another kind of piece of advice. You're allowed to disagree with the feedback. But don't disagree right away. In the moment, find that the 5% of whatever they said that you can agree with, and then say, I need to think about the rest of this and I'll get back to you. And then do get back. Sometimes the only reward you have to offer is a fuller explanation of how you see things.
Wow, those are great steps. And it's important that embrace the discomfort. It's almost like the old sales advice, you know, which is to stop talking and just be silent. Don't fill the silence and use that to your advantage.
Yeah. Easy to say, really hard to do.
Yeah. It made me remember, Kim, I had a good boss who was always asking for feedback and was sincere about it. And when I first started working for him, I was so uncomfortable, you know, being put in that position. I wouldn't give him any feedback. I'd say, oh no, everything's great. You're doing great. So one day he said, he changed his tactic on me and he said, Kevin, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, over the last week, how was I as a boss? I said, oh, you're great. Like 8, 9, everything's great. He says, okay, what would it have taken to have been a 10?
Right.
So he cornered me on that with that little 1 to 10 number. So Kim, what's the best way our listeners can find out more about you and your company?
The best way is to go to radicalcandor.com, and you can learn a lot more about us. You can find out about our podcast. You can find out about the Candor Coach, which is the app we've built that'll help you take the advice in the book. And you'll find out where you can buy the book, which is all the usual places. You can buy it at your local bookstore. You can buy it on Barnes & Noble. You can buy it on Amazon.
Brilliant. All right, friends, you've just been coached today by the woman who designed Apple's course for new managers. How cool is that? You can get Kim Scott's new book, Radical Candor, as she said, from Amazon or your favorite bookstore. All of the links she mentioned will be in the show notes over at leadx.org. And listeners, if you want to join the LeadX Ambassador Group on Facebook, where we do monthly giveaways, Q&A sessions with our authors, free books, and more, just go up to iTunes, leave an honest review, and let me know. I'm at kevin@leadx.org, and we'll invite you into that ambassador program. Remember, until next time, leadership is about influence, not authority. You influence when you speak up, and you influence when you remain silent. You influence when you step up and when you choose to be a bystander. So influence is inevitable. Leadership is not a choice. You're a leader whether you want to be or not. So the question remains, what kind of leader will you be today?